All right, so you're listening to this podcast right now, London is Blue, and guess what? We host our podcast on anchor.fm. That's right. If you're looking to host your own podcast, this is the easiest free way to get started. It's got a content creation tool, allows you to record and the podcast right from a phone. That's right. Don't even need a computer, but you can do it there too. They'll also help you distribute it, which is probably the most challenging part. You don't want to have to mess with that. They got you covered. You can get it right on a Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as any other place podcasts are found. And you know what? You can monetize it too. Make a little cash for sharing your great content with the world. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one individual place. So you know what? Head over to your app store, download the Anchor app, or head to anchor.fm to get started if you're ready to launch your podcast and make it happen.
Hi, this is Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
This is William.
I'm Mason Mount. You're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, Chelsea fans, welcome back to another episode of the London is Blue podcast coming at you this Sunday post-Bournemouth. We've got Nick and Dan back. Nick, you have been climbing mountains, sledding. What else have you been doing all the way up there in the winter north?
Well, I was in Utah and in Lake Tahoe for the week doing a little video shoot for work. And my first time snowshoeing. I snowshoed about a couple of miles, which was fun. So that was cool. And now we're back to talk about what is a tremendous result. A really bad result for Chelsea. So excited to walk back into this dumpster fire.
Dan, you're going to have to help him out.
Yeah, we're glad to have you back, Nick. And we're glad that with it was a loss, because really that's, you know, Brandon and I record, we win, we advance in the knockout stage of the Champions League, and now you come back and we have to talk about a loss. Like, I just, coincidence?
If only we could play Lille every week, you know?
Coincidence? I think not. I think not. So let's try to bring a little levity here.
All right. Well, before we get to the powder kegs reappearance of the pod, we want to bring in George Benson, massive friend of the pod. Super excited to have you back, George. How have you been, sir?
Been good. It's been good. It's been a while. I've missed you guys. The Cock Tavern's not the same without the three musketeers. So do you know what? Thanks to you guys, I actually go in there before every game now. Like, it's just the place to be for a beer. Before and after the game.
Yeah. It's no credit to us. Chidge and all that gang have sorted us out. It's the least we can do to pass that knowledge on. So everyone, as you head over to London, hit up the Cock Tavern, especially before the match, and do a little sightseeing with all the stars that are there.
Were you paid to say that, or do you have to disclose, or is this just we're just giving out big shouts to big places right now?
Yeah,
hashtag sponsored. That would be amazing. I want to get sponsored by the Cock Tavern as like the show sponsor.
At least while we're over there. Decade.
Yeah. All right, Nick, overall theme of today's show, what do we have in store?
Well, to be fair, Dan wrote this, but I second it. Holiday blues. I think there's been a little bit of a rough patch, and thus we're feeling the blues a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And so the running order will be how Chelsea set up today and how that set us up for the result. Then we can talk about the Rudiger and Zuma pairing and how that worked. And then we can wrap it up with if we each make one change for the four matches remaining before potential January replacements arrive, what would we do if we were running the transfer plan? So big shout out to these Apple Podcast reviewers, Dan.
Yeah, no surprise. Another week, another couple days, more five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. We had Joe Rob, we had Mal's Football, we had TC Rarlo, and we had Dustin is a Blue. All five stars, all amazing. Thank you so much for leaving those. And again, as always, leave a five-star review on Apple Podcasts before we record our next episode. We'll give you a shout out, and it's just a nice way of appreciating the podcast, helping other people find us.
Definitely, and a huge shout out to Nate and Luke, who both joined us on Patreon. I will be getting your Discord access and gifts in the mail soon. Appreciate your support. And lastly, Nick, tis the season to get cold.
Yep, tis the season indeed. what an amazing setup that was. we have a few scarves left. I don't know the exact number, a handful, maybe a baker's dozen. I'm not sure. But we have been shipping those. Dan has been a busy little worker bee on that front. getting those out to our friends near and far. If you are interested in one of our only team in London with the European Cup scarves, George Benson has one of those.
I'm trying to get it out of the drawer right now. I want to wear it.
It's been in a drawer. It's been
in
dusty.
The drawer, not hanging. That's a bummer.
No, it does have prime pride and precedence with the other Chelsea scarves. And I can't see it right now, but and the Seattle Sounders scarf as well. I know this is a Chelsea podcast, but I've got to represent, Dan.
So if you are interested in one of said scarves that celebrity George Benson wears on a weekly basis, <don't. laughs> $20 for US, $25 for international. That includes shipping. PayPal us, contact@londonisbluepodcast.com.
And what I would say is get an order in before Friday if you want it shipped sometime in this year. Because with holiday travel, it's going to make shipping from this worker bee, this ununionized elf, a little difficult.
Let's go. Make Dan busy. Give him something to do this week. Right.
Now George is removing all of the clothes from his drawer.
Do you know what? It's this tidy up I did today, okay? This is spring cleaning. It's always the things that you really need the most that just get piled under all the other things, you know?
Yeah. Mine isn't spring cleaning. It's called winter transition when I have to get all my cold clothes out of storage again. Because it's 2 degrees Fahrenheit right now.
Stay tuned for the end of the episode to see if George finds a scarf.
So... Yeah, we're going to come back to that. But as of right now, in case you all missed it, match review time. It was Bournemouth in the Premier League at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea 0 or nil, Bournemouth 1. Not what we were expecting going into it. But George, talk to us about the pre-match vibe and maybe the atmosphere once you got into the bridge.
I think it's one of those games where you rock up and you expect nothing other than a win. It's like a routine one. It's not like one of these games where you rock up and you think there's any potential of walking away with anything other than 3 points. It's not like a Man United or an Arsenal or a Tottenham. It's Bournemouth. And then if you look at what they've been doing recently, they've been so average. They've been in like a transitional period where they're trying to figure out how to defend because they realised they couldn't do it. Then they've gone and lost their best defender, yet they still keep a clean sheet at Stamford Bridge and win. So I didn't see that coming at all. But you could also technically say that we kind of did see it coming because the decline in performances has been kind of slow but steady for a while now.
Yeah, unfortunately, we'll definitely get into that form table very soon. Dan, run us through the lineup.
Yeah, so we had Kepa between the sticks, Azpi, Rudiger, Zuma, and Emerson as our back four. We saw Conte and Jorginho as the two. We saw Willian, Mount, and Pulisic as the three. And then Tammy Abraham up top as the one, number nine. Andreas Christensen, Pedro, Willie Caballero, and Reece James, all unused substitutes in this match. Substitute appearances from Mateo Kovacic, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and Michy Batshuayi, all making an appearance in this game.
Yes. Interesting. If you do look at the expected goals map for Chelsea, we were supposed to have 1.6 to their 1.2. But as Kaylee Graphic said, the Blues were both unfortunate to lose and also really not that good at home to a much weaker side, which is not sugarcoating much of it at all. Nick, from a top line stats, I think this kind of paints a bit of a narrative here. Chelsea with 18 shots, 5 on target, 68% possession, 83% pass accuracy. We've had to foul them 9 times. We picked up a caution, 3 offsides. Bournemouth, 11 shots, only 2 on target, 1 went in. 32% possession. They fouled us 14 times, picked up 2 cautions, and were offsides once. It's Chelsea had a lot of the ball. We had the majority of chances, yet here we are.
It felt a lot like last year, didn't it? I mean, it felt, and I know we're going to get into the passing movement and some of Lampard's comments here about what he did not like about the performance, but it felt like a slow march towards a draw for most of the game. And then, this happens in football where, Gosling, of all people, will hit an overhead. And it just, goes in. It was kind of like Tammy's from the, I think, the Wolves match earlier in the year, where he just kind of flicked it up and it went over the line. It didn't feel like there was a spark or a directive in this match. And I think that is a huge point of emphasis moving forward. This team a few months ago were so dynamic and creative and had different runs happening all over the pitch. And yesterday it felt like we were trying to do the same thing over and over and over again, and it just wasn't working.
Nope, it unfortunately was not. And so to get into that a little bit, I mean, that was not the result that Chelsea needed, especially with what's going on around us in the table. The comfort in top four is going quickly. So obviously there was midweek positivity after we advanced to the Champions League knockout stages, but you know, losing four of your last five for Lampard, the Premier League form specifically is not great. Nick has talked about losing to, you know, essentially relegation threatened sides for a lot of these losses too, which makes it even harder to take. But if we try to just focus on Bournemouth and starting with the lineup and substitutions, George, was there anything that caught you by surprise, or maybe now that we've had time to digest it in hindsight, think maybe could have been different?
I didn't see any. I think Bournemouth's best players weren't even on the pitch, like in every position. Like Nathan Ake was out in defence. They had Callum Wilson out as a striker, and Harry Wilson, who's been really creative for them, who I actually thought if he played, if all three of those played, I dread to think what the scoreline could have been from for Chelsea's perspective yesterday, because like as a creative outlet, I don't think Bournemouth really did very much at all. I think Ryan Fraser's a good player. He's very quick. He's very like he could have given Azpilicueta more trouble, but I don't think he actually did give him that much trouble. But for me, it's just like, yeah, we had 18 shots. We had nearly 70% of the possession, but at no point in that game yesterday did I think we were going to do anything with it. I've actually not left a football match at Chelsea for any reason other than having to catch like the last train home before. I actually left early yesterday, which I'm not usually an advocate of that kind of debaucherous behaviour. But I don't think I've ever felt so let down by a collective performance that offered absolutely nothing. Like all of these stats about possession, about chances, like there wasn't really proper chances. Their keeper made some good saves, but I wasn't confident at all that we were going to score a goal in that game. At all.
Dan, I mean, obviously the Emerson header was the best chance we had. But, you know,
Was it really a good chance? Because that was like right
a header
into
from
his
three
hands.
Yards out. I would take that any match.
Same.
Yeah. poor execution a little bit. But the point is that, you know, I tend to agree with George in the fact that, you know, we do have these stats that on paper you're like, oh, look, Chelsea did a lot in this match. But when you put it up to the eye test, like there wasn't a lot going forward as far as creativity and the ability to create chances and things like that. We settled a lot for, you know, kind of half chances on the day. So do you feel like there could have been maybe different lineup or different substitutions, just the way the match played out? Again, now that we have this hindsight vision.
Yeah, I was shocked that Reece James wasn't playing. And I think about where we saw the challenges were with Everton and with West Ham and in this match is that these teams have set up well defensively to just absorb the pressure and forces out to the wings. And when we've seen Reece James come on, it's not perfect by any means. I'm not saying that Reece James comes in and we win 7-0, 8-0. I'm saying Reece James comes in and our option down the flank, the interchange with whether it be Willian or if Pulisic swaps sides with Pulisic, that there's at least some movement there, some direct play that wasn't happening with Azpi on that right-hand side, or, you know, flop Azpi then to the other side, pull Emerson out of the game. That's probably the one, if I was just looking at one situational placement change that I felt like could have happened. And then, I mean, I think maybe the other one, Nick, is not seeing Kovacic start after maybe he's been one of, next to Tammy, the top two players in this side for the first part of the season. That was also kind of one where, yeah, this was a must-win game, even with, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 injuries to Bournemouth starting 11. You can't take it lightly. It's three crucial points.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my, you know, it's not as much about the lineup. I think it's just about the approach. This to me is a must-win game. Just given our string of results, this team needed to win this game. And I think the approach was a little lackadaisical. I think George's comment about just the expectation to win is 100% accurate. That's how I felt going into it. But, you know, you lose to the 18th, 16th, and 15th place teams in the table over the last week and a half, 2 weeks. These are crucial, crucial points that I think could really affect our end of season standing. I think this is, I know that Lampard has to just be furious that they dropped potentially 9 points in the table. I mean, think about where those 9 points would potentially get us. So I think it's just the approach to these games. It's been a little lackadaisical. I think, you know, George, I'd love to kind of understand the atmosphere, because Lampard did make a few comments about that, but it's just not, it wasn't good enough yesterday.
I think everybody in the stadium felt similarly to me. Like, for example, I was shed lower row 4, so right next to the corner flag. And every time we got a corner, it's not like, oh, let's all get excited and like, oh, boys, we got a corner. Let's like, this is a chance here. We just know that Willian's not going to beat the first man. And even the first time, like it was actually a bit of banter going on in the shed when he actually did beat the first man from a corner. And then he steps up for the second one, and everyone, I could just hear it. It's just like, no, he's not going to do it again. Not two in a row, surely. And then lo and behold, it's like he's there like slapping his knee, and then Emerson takes the next one. And then that was arguably even worse than the Willian corner. It's just like the constant groans and sighs just... And I bring it back to like not expecting to score when we got the ball, because like we mentioned pre-recording about Pulisic being kind of ganged up on, Nick, and I'm sure you'll go into that a lot more. But like when Bournemouth put a number on Chelsea's really only creative outlets who were actually doing anything other than pressing, like the whole crowd felt so flat yesterday because no one actually saw where the goal was going to come from. There's not... No disrespect to Pulisic. I think he's been trying to grab this mantle of being like the match winner, the man who can just like grab the game by the horns and just do something different. Yesterday, because he was played out of the game, and I mean Emerson, like, does him and Christian not get on? Why wouldn't he pass him the ball? I don't understand. And the same things are being said over and over again. It's just like we're watching the same things happen, not just in this match, but in the game against Everton, even in the game against Man City, which is arguably the most frustrating performance of the season because we did not deserve to lose that game. Like, I don't know why it's on a loop of repeating the same stupid passing over and over again.
That's totally fair. As I was kind of watching this match, I got into that. I think it's interesting. Lampard was asked after the match if fitness was a thing. You know, only made one change from midweek, playing a lot of the same players. And he just kind of says, I don't believe in that. So maybe that'll be a thing that he comes to believe in a little bit more later on in his managerial career. You had West Ham, Everton, Bournemouth just playing in a block 9, whatever it is, and we just can't break them down. At home, it's not great. I think it's probably amplified even worse because there's nothing worse than like a quiet stadium. If you're on the road, at least you have the battle with the home fans there. But like when there's not that connection of the home fans and Chelsea on the pitch at the Bridge, that like affects the match. I mean, it really does. And I think that that's a huge part of it. I want to get in the passing stuff in the second part. But Nick, what did you make of a lot of what Lampard said after the match as far as his analysis, his perspective of how it wasn't good enough and what needs to change?
Yeah, I mean, he did note, and our friend Naz documented this quite well. He said, in front of our home fans, it is clear now we are not playing well enough to or getting results. We are not creating enough chances. We created 2 or 3 chances today, and we needed to take them. The fans weren't excited today, and they shouldn't be. He also made other comments about how the stadium kind of was dead and that the team didn't really inspire the confidence for fans to really get into it. It's a little bit of a chicken and the egg, though, George, right? Because to me, if I were a player and I heard this just incredible wall of sound kind of bringing me on, I might be able to play a little better, or the fans might be more excited if the players were playing better. So, like, I don't know where it stops and starts, if I'm honest.
Well, I mean, if we want to call ourselves an elite football club, we shouldn't need to have an added bit of atmosphere to get the players to beat Bournemouth. I'm sorry, but if this was a game yesterday against Man United and we played like that, you could guarantee the atmosphere would be better. if it was a game against even like a Newcastle, for example, let's just say like we add in some extra like crazy traveling support credit to the Newcastle away fans, because it's just the nature of the fixture. Like, I think that for the Chelsea fans to get behind the team, it's a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday. It's actually normally known to have better atmospheres. Like, sure, you've had an extra hour or two to have a drink in the pub. It's not like you've raced up to Everton and it's like, oh, we might not even make it in time. It's a good time for a fixture in December. People should have been like at it, at the races as the fans yesterday. But I think everyone could tell. I don't know why. I think it's been like a slow burner of just negative football. I think people don't like the fact that we seem to be playing more Sarri ball now than we did under Maurizio Sarri, but it's just like, it's just not working. But yeah, I guess it would help if the Chelsea fans were a bit more supportive, but I think we've seen like the polar opposites in the last month between within the Chelsea fan base. It's like, it's all great, it's all good. Like we said, like, oh, we don't need to make any signings. We've won 7 in a row. Like, keep the transfer ban. You know what? Stick an extra one on the end of it. Why not? We can do it. Now it's kind of like everyone has kind of hit home with the reality of the situation that, yeah, we've got a very young squad. That's fine. That's cool. We can allow some like hiccups because of that. But if we want to be known as an elite football club, and we need to act like an elite football club with the fans, with the results, but like on the pitch right now, there's nothing elite about what we're delivering whatsoever.
I think what we're also not seeing, what we saw maybe a little earlier in the season, some of that experimentation with the lineup. So, you know, if we know that when we set up against West Ham, when we set up against Everton, and we've seen this performance multiple times now, you know, why not go to a three at the back, try to kind of do wing backs with Emerson and Reece James, you know, push more up, own a little bit more of the possession and, you know, do things with it to kind of really flatten Bournemouth and just make life difficult for them and press on top of them. Some of the pressing that we had in this match was very limited for very, very short periods. And I think that's why Lampard gets the question around being tired, because what we saw earlier in the season, and, you know, maybe this is what we saw with Klopp when he came into the Premier League, we saw it with Spurs previously, is that when teams shift to this style of play where the requirement is to press or attempt to press for 90 minutes, fitness becomes a massive challenge. And so while I appreciate that Lampard is trying to not allow tiredness to maybe be the narrative, Brandon, I don't know, and I don't feel like we are pressing with the same intensity, and we're not trying different things. The point that George made earlier, it's, you know, it's the definition of insanity at the moment.
Yeah, it's probably hard to press a little bit with, I mean, if I think back to Everton, they just lumped it forward to Calvert-Lewin all match. So you really couldn't press it because they just released right away. So, you know, when teams take that approach, that makes it a little bit different. Bournemouth were just dumping it towards the end of the match, just to get it out and waste time, essentially, so they could reset their shape. And I think that's where these teams have nullified the press by just saying, nope, we don't want it. Bang it up top. We'll see if we can knock it down, maybe win the second. Otherwise, we'll defend again. And that's what has been happening. And that's why Lampard in the recent weeks has said they need to replace a player like Eden Hazard, who can have magic and unlock a defense on their own, because we're coming up against walls of defenders right now. And it's been a tough challenge. Even Lille, they wanted to play a little bit, you know, granted that it was kind of Lille B, you know, but they wanted to play. And so that gave us a chance to do some of the things that are strengths. Look, this is exactly the time of year where there's enough film on Chelsea. People can start to analyze it, break it down, see patterns. Now this is when we have to adapt and tweak things to counteract what the lower table teams are going to do to try to nullify us. But, I mean, that's what teams did against us last season under Maurizio Sarri. They're just like, we'll wait. You will pass around our box at 30 yards. We're comfortable with you there. We need to have something different to offer them. I thought some of the crosses were the most dangerous things we had to Tammy. And it was good to kind of switch it up a little bit. It just wasn't as consistent as I probably would have liked overall.
Well, I think really quick on that point, that the pass that should have resulted in the goal from Jorginho to Mount was, it was and is, I think, our most dangerous weapon this year. That kind of really steep angled ball that has a little bit of spin on it, where, you know, a Tammy or a Mount or a Pulisic can get on the end of it and kind of lash it across the face of goal. Mount just didn't do it well enough yesterday. And of course, you know, Brandon's goalkeeper's curse has resurrected itself in front of our very eyes. but it's that kind of ball that I just don't think we tried enough yesterday, because it forces opposing defenses to think differently about where the balls are coming in from, instead of the, you know, let's put it out wide, let's cross it back, it's going to be ineffective, or let's try and dribble through and walk it into the back of the net. I think we need to try a few more of the steep angle balls, George, to break down defenses.
Not even that. I think, yes, I would agree, but just why can we not shoot from outside the box? Like, are we allergic to shooting outside of the 18-yard box?
It's illegal.
It's illegal.
Yeah.
The problem is, if you do that, teams have to then defend with a risk. We're talking about Chelsea attacking with risk, but defenses can't just sit back if they know that a Rudiger or a Zuma is going to try and unleash one, and then the keeper makes a save, and then there's like a Mason, a Christian, or a Tammy there to poach in a rebound. Like, we saw that with Drogba. Yeah, he could have scored some of the most ridiculous goals where he had no right to do so, but he also scored a lot of poacher goals because he had players like Ballack, Frank, outside the area, pinging ones that the keepers might save or they might not. Like, I don't see why all of this emphasis needs to be on crossing the ball or walking the ball into the net. I think that if we tried to shoot once in a while, then, you know, defences don't see us as such a predictable attacking outlet. It's just been a huge firework go out just outside my house. I think that was me trying to say, like, bang, you hit the point. but, like, Brandon, I don't know about you. Who do you think is the player in this team who could be the one to just unleash one from outside the box?
Well, Kovacic has had a couple recently, which have probably surprised us all. But, you know, I don't know. We haven't really seen too many players put their foot through the ball and at least take that chance. I mean, you think back to, obviously, hard not to compare to Lampard, but when he would get ready and unleash his shots, there's just so much power behind it. I don't really, like, you don't see Jorginho doing it. You don't see Conte doing it. You don't see Kovacic to the power level doing it. So then you're like, well, now you have to hope that maybe one of, like, Mount or Pulisic can do that. But we haven't really seen that from them. So to your point, I don't know. Barkley was the answer, but Barkley is broken right now. But the way things are going, he might get a chance just because Lampard needs to do something different. And if he can come in and be that threat, you know, from 25 in, he might be able to force his way back into contention. But a lot has to go his way for that to happen.
Yeah, I would quickly say on the Mount piece, like, it has actually been really surprising to me, George, that he hasn't been kind of the late runner in the box. I think he and Pulisic yesterday ended up making a lot of the same runs at the same time. And there were times where you looked at, you know, where could you possibly pass the ball if you're standing right next to each other? You know, like, my hope for Mount was that he was going to be the late arriver into the box and be able to smash some of those opportunities like he did against Villa. I think was a really good example there. But he's been really trying to walk it into the back of the net recently, and I think it's not doing him any favors.
I think a lot of that as well comes down to the way that this team have connected together. Like, initially at the start of the season, when no one was really guaranteed a place, we didn't know what the formation was going to be. We saw 3-4-3, we saw 4-2-3-1, we've seen 4-3-3. I think at the beginning, players were willing to take risks because they didn't know whether or not they even had a chance to be part of the plan for the longer term. Like, players like Mount, they kind of had to go for the jugular more often because, like, players don't just walk in their first season when they're that young into a Chelsea team. It doesn't happen. So now, where it's a bit like, okay, well, yeah, I'm a regular starter, I feel as though Mount in particular has kind of taken his eye off of the prize a little bit, and he's got a bit comfortable. And I think that some of these players, for example, Mount and Pulisic yesterday, brilliant individually, but when they're not linking up together, it's almost embarrassing. Like, the whole, I think Mount took on a couple of players and then tried to pass it to Christian, and Christian just ran the opposite direction. It goes out for a throw-in. Like, these don't even get classified in the end as opportunities because the ball doesn't even make it to the box. So at times I feel like everyone's kind of trying to play for themselves, and there's less focus on the passages where people are trying to connect together with little 1-2s. Like, why have we stopped seeing that? It's just disappeared from the game.
Well, I think that's a really good point, and probably a good lead in for our transition real quick into point two, talking about how the players played together or didn't, as we saw. So we're going to take a real quick break. Thank you to the sponsor for supporting the show financially. When we are back, it is all about kind of the struggles we had, and then the look ahead at the transfer window. All right, so, you know, kind of talking about that, I think what we can do is, I was really upset at the amount of unforced errors and passes we had yesterday. I couldn't believe it. And it was coming from Conte, it was coming from Jorginho, like everyone was just not playing accurate passes without pressure on them. And partially that was because Bournemouth were cutting off passing options. But Dan, if you look at the pass map that you have in the script here, the biggest concern is how tight Chelsea are on themselves. Like, there's no stretching, there's no depth, there's no width. Chelsea were playing in this very compact ball in the middle of the field. And that is partially because, like I said, Bournemouth choking us out with the way they set up. But there, everything was a backwards pass. You go forward and it go right back over and over and over.
Yeah, definitely a rinse and repeat moment. I think the real big thing is, so like they, you know, to visualize it for those who are listening, it's pass map. As players pass more, the size of their little bubble representing them on the pitch continues to increase in size. And I think eventually the Zuma and Rudiger ones are just going to basically turn this whole white pass map blue, because the amount of passing that they did in between one another for the entirety of the match.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, your center back should be passing back and forth to kind of try to help switch play, but the amount in which they did it with, so 117 and 110 passes today from our two center backs was ridiculous. I mean, Lampard's comment saying center back to center back, fullback to fullback, back to center back, back to fullback, I don't want to come and see that. It really was, for all of the good things that Rudiger and Zuma did in this match defensively to snuff out Bournemouth's attack, to make it difficult, a couple last-ditch tackles and challenges and saves, Nick, they really are not the ball playing center backs who are going to help us move and transition quickly to counter, like to start a counterattack appropriately.
Yeah. I mean, that's the truth. And I think both of them, have the ability to hit the long ball, which would be a nice change up, George, right? Like that hit the diagonal. But they were skying those over yesterday as well. So like
so
they
many
were
out of bounds. Ridiculous.
So I mean, like, if you look at it and you look at, you know, where the opportunities are really coming from and how deep Tammy had to come to get the ball, for example, that's not a way to win a football match.
Well, I think we talk about diagonal balls, and yeah, like it was actually comical by the end of the game how many. It's like, oh, you've attempted a long pass, have you? Well, let's just make sure the guy who's sat in row one is ready to catch it. It's like we're playing cricket all of a sudden. Like, they should have given a prize to the kid who caught the most balls out for a throw-in. It was embarrassing. But another thing, I think, I don't want to give Tammy too much of a hard time, but I think he needs to make more dynamic runs. He needs to be moving more. He seems to, like, he has the idea in his mind. Like, I've seen him a few times. Well, I keep an eye on Tammy when Kepa's got the ball and the way he reacts to Kepa passing it out the back. Tammy's always frustrated that Kepa's not tried to go long to him, but Tammy still stood in the central midfield position. So if Kepa does go long to Tammy, like, you've got to make sure that either Mount, Pulisic, or Kovacic, Kante, Jorginho, any of those midfielders could be around him to receive it when it comes off of him. But if Tammy Abraham is saying, you know what, no, I'm going to try and drop. Yeah, okay, defences like to play the high line from the goal kick. But every, like, 1 in 4 clearances, or every... Again, I refer it back to this pass map, and I know that people can't see it if they're listening, but the amount of times that the same pass was made between Zuma and Rudiger, and if it didn't, it became diagonal, or it was to the fullback. If it was just straight down the channel and Tammy was making a dynamic run to the left and then Pulisic comes into the middle, or Mount comes into the middle, or a dynamic run to the right to try and get to the byline, that's when I think that Chelsea could start to see more progressive play from Pulisic and Mount to get into the shooting positions, because Tammy can hold the ball up really well. but he doesn't get the opportunities to do so. And when he does, it's so predictable that he's crowded out by Bournemouth defenders. Dan, what do you think?
I would agree with that. Yeah, there's nothing I find wrong in your statement, George. I just find the reality of that happening on the pitch to be a problem. I would also kind of highlight the fact that, you know, when either it was Emerson or Azpilicueta, you know, they also were recycling back to Jorginho. This very horizontal passing game, not moving the ball kind of vertically down the pitch, was a bit of a challenge. And it's, you know, the difference of having Jorginho in the match and having Kovacic in the match is that Kovacic will run at pace with the ball. Jorginho is looking to distribute, to find an individual. And outside of the attempt into Mount to play him in, really sometimes does not find that forward pass that, you know, people created clips last season of robbed assists for Jorginho. Like, that ball has kind of maybe disappeared a little bit from his game. And that's where, you know, I think going back to how we set up for this match, having Kovacic in there, when we did kind of get him in, we did get a chance to let him run with it. Yeah, that's when I felt a little bit better, Nick, about what I was seeing, because at least then we were trying to move the ball vertically, kind of continue moving it closer and closer to their box, and not just allowing ourselves to get so slow within the pass, pass, pass kind of momentum, where we really were not trying to move with any type of quickness or tenacity that we saw earlier in the season.
Yeah, and if you can't, you know, see this pass, man, Dan, we should probably just post this so that people can
see it. Should we tweet it out? Yeah, we'll tweet it out.
Pulisic and Mount are on top of each other, basically, on the left. Willian is far away on the right, but even his directional kind of icon is, like, horizontal, completely horizontal and not moving forward. Abraham's is actually moving backward, and N'Golo Kante is like, strafing across the midfield. So if you're looking at this, and I know I kind of mentioned this earlier, like, if you know Pulisic is getting triple teamed and you're not finding any joy on the left-hand side of attack, there has to be more of an emphasis for Mount to slide over Brandon and make sure that there is a lane or an opportunity for a late run in the box. You can't stand on each other. You basically, if you're Bournemouth, you're triple teaming, so you're taking a risk anyway to triple team and not have as many defenders on the other side. But then Mount's basically giving you a free player there because he's not moving in any different direction. So they got a twofer.
Yeah. And to put it in perspective, Naz tweeted, and I will say this is a little selective. So the center backs made 117 and 110 passes each today. Tammy Abraham, Mishi Batshuayi, Willian, Christian Pulisic, and Cho and Mason made 97 between them. Now, to be fair, Mishi was a sub, Cho was a sub, but you still had three players who played significant minutes in that match and still between themselves only had 97 passes total. Like, the imbalance that is there just kind of shows you, and Lampard, you know, lamented that, the fact that we were going from center back to center back to full back to center back. It was just back and back and back. And there was no, like you said, you know, George, whether it's the runs, whether it's the willing to take people on and find gaps, it just, I don't know. It seemed, you know, N'Golo Kante and Jorginho had to drop back in between the center backs or right next to them just to pick up the ball. And when they looked up, it was nothing. It sure wasn't.
Yeah, no, I think the more I think about it, the more it just winds me up, because it's monotonous to watch. It's predictable to play against. And it's also frustrating to be a part of. When you know that you're a player like Christian Pulisic who wants the ball, who wants to be able to have space to dribble, when you're someone like, I don't even know if Willian wants to do that. I think sometimes he wakes up and he wants to do it. And then other times he wakes up and he's like, nah, I'm actually all right. I don't want to run at anyone today. So I think we need to change the tactics completely. For me, I would love to see two strikers. Whether that is Mishi Batshuayi starts to start matches alongside Tammy Abraham in the meantime whilst we wait for a potential striker in January, then cool. But they need to change it up. And Tammy's either isolated or the ball isn't good enough into the box because it doesn't come in at the right time. So I don't see where this is going to change anytime soon with either, because the 4-2-3-1 and the 4-3-3, they both transition into similar shapes in offense and defense. So it's become so, so predictable. And I think that is the reason for the turn in form. And I think a lot of it, again, probably comes down to that, the honeymoon phase of having to play to get that starting spot in the team. That's kind of gone now. These players have got to remember that now that there's like $150 million to be spent in January, probably more than that in the summer, like players like Callum Hudson-Odoi, when he comes on and gets minutes, he's got to be more effective. He's got to be offering a lot more width. Like even when Callum came on yesterday, he's trying to like come into the middle to collect the ball because it wasn't going out onto the wings. So I just think we've all got to just accept that maybe the overall quality in the way that this team is built from the back isn't there for the attacking players to be able to show what they can really do in the positions that matter most in front of goal.
Yep, and that is an interesting part of what can we change so that teams don't know what to expect coming into that, always having something different. Because I wouldn't say we're like a Liverpool or a City where we eventually will just overpower them because we are such a loaded lineup. There's going to need to be changes and being clever and finding ways to break these teams down for Chelsea until we get back to kind of those top echelons of where we've been before. So with that being said, January is coming very soon, only a couple weeks away. And while there is a desire to look ahead to the transfers that we could make to strengthen the side, Chelsea have 4 more Premier League matches before that window opens, and they are Spurs with Jose, Southampton, Arsenal, and Brighton. So if you could influence a single decision from this stretch of games, what would it be? Nick, if you're looking for Lampard to do one thing differently as we ramp up, maybe it's give someone a chance who hasn't gotten it. Maybe you're just going to completely freeze someone out at this point or something even smaller. What do you think?
Well, I think as George was talking about Tammy's position earlier, I think that's 100% right. It's not only being able to play an accurate ball up to him, either from the goal kick or from midfield, but it's also about players being in position if he doesn't control the ball perfectly to kind of mop up the rebound, right? And I think that leads me to think about a 4-4-2 as a tactical switch for a couple of matches to see how it works, because I know that he's hungry for goals and I know that he probably doesn't want to be a hold up striker like Giroud or whatever, but I do think there might be some value in having a ball that's able to be played up for the second striker, whether that's Pulisic or Giroud or Batshuayi or someone like that, to get the ball and then to have the whole team with width advance it forward and not be so stuck in the middle. I think that's maybe something that I would try and change. And I know that sounds like it might be a little bit pedantic or route one, Dan, but to me, we need to try something different, and I would be willing to see what that looked like if I were Lampard.
Yeah, formation and lineup make the most sense in terms of what you do to experiment. I think where my mind is going to, if I'm making one change, it's how do we do more with getting the ball to, find ways to get the ball to Tammy, right? If we get the ball to Tammy, we're going to win games. He's, converts at a generally high rate relative to other strikers in the Premier League. I think doing that results to maybe going back to having a 3 at the back for a little bit. Try an Aspi, Zuma, Rudiger situation, get Reese into the lineup and Emerson, have them kind of operate as those kind of wing backs, and put Conte and Kovacic and go for like a 3-4-3 situation where we have the ball, we're pushing it forward, we're getting a chance to kind of whip in crosses into the box. I mean, Emerson is not as good as James in terms of delivering those crosses, but we have to do something that's going to make it difficult. And Pulisic has shown that he can head the ball in. So, if there's a concern around the fact that we don't have maybe enough tall players on the pitch, Pulisic has found a way to score headers. Abraham will find a way to score headers. We just need to put the ball on them to make that happen. And that's where I want to try. Where teams are giving us space has been on the wings. So let's take advantage of the space that we're being given, George.
No, I totally agree. I think we can all kind of say that there's more support needed for Tammy, whether that's like a 3-4-3 or a 4-4-2 diamond potentially. But again, I think the issue at the moment is the width. And I think if we go with a diamond, it would have to be to like to benefit our best players. It would need to be a narrow one. So that's not going to work. One of Pulisic's things I didn't think he had in his locker is that heading ability. We've seen him score headed goals. Even yesterday, he cut one back across. Like he's very good in the air and he could be very useful. But I think in terms of if he was to play as like a second striker with Tammy, I think we'd see him score more than Tammy, because I think that Tammy is probably still better in the air than Pulisic if we break it all down and narrow it all up. And I think Pulisic would actually benefit a lot off of maybe finding those scraps. But whatever it is that needs to change, I think it needs to be someone who is tighter to Tammy, which would then hopefully move either Mount or Pulisic away from one another. Like they could be cool friends off the pitch and stuff and hang out, but like we don't want to see you like in each other's pockets when you're playing. Like it looks at the moment as if they're like doing their own little school kick around routine together, but it's just not working, and it's kind of nullifying a position in the side. It's almost like we're playing with 10 men because they become one.
Yeah.
So I think there's not really anyone who I look at on the bench to come in if Mount was to be dropped. A lot of people I've seen have said like, oh, Mount's had a few bad games now, it's about time Frank drops him. I don't necessarily think that it's about dropping Mount, because I think he can bring this team a lot that someone who could come off the bench couldn't. And I look at the bench and I don't see anybody who would come in and dramatically change the dynamic, which at the moment is desperately what's needed. So I think give Pulisic a run in more of like a central position alongside Tammy, and I think we'd at least have more, we'd see more fruits from the labor of at least crossing the ball in, if we can get the ball into the flipping box.
That is interesting, and I think might lead Brandon to my kind of final point on this, is where I've seen Pulisic most dangerous is when he drops centrally and makes a central run up, because he scares the shit out of opposing defenders. He's willing to run at pace and with control that basically freezes a back line, and that's where you can possibly see a runner in from behind, whether that's a Mount or Callum or Willian, really finding joy. I think that makes it harder for Tammy, because he's not necessarily kind of a turn and hit type of striker if he does get the right ball. But I'm interested in that too. And also an adjustment that we all talked about, Brandon, is just shoot the ball. Just rip it. See what happens, man.
Right. Pulisic has been most threatening when he's coming in from the left and going across the top of the box at the right, where he essentially will easily turn the right back. So now he's running at a center back, and they're typically big, tall guys that are not nearly as fast, and he can put them on ice skates a little bit. So I think that's a really interesting shot. I mean, honestly, I didn't have too much. I think it's the change has, you know, there's a lot of attitude stuff of not being complacent and sitting back and waiting, and just I would just love to see the team like run out of gas at the end of the game, because we just did not let off a team until they just gave up. Because we know if you put people under pressure, they're going to crack, they're going to give up. You know, if you constantly make them have to defend, they're going to get in their own head, and a mistake will happen. I mean, that's what I would like to see. You know, I mean, this match, the last couple of matches, you're making changes to catch the game or to try to nick it at the end because it hasn't worked. Sometimes you see like Liverpool and City, they just go at these teams with like almost like a lack of respect, because they're like, we're just going to press you into the ground until you give us what we need. And then once they're under so much pressure, and then once they finally crack, it all breaks open and they're not going to put up a fight and they're going to give up 3-4 goals kind of a thing. That's what, at least like find a match, and maybe it is a Spurs match because it's a bigger one, that we go out there and just run at them from the beginning and try to counteract everything they're going to do, especially, you know, if anyone knows Frank or Jose and what he's going to set up in a big match, like it's Frank. He's done it for years. So I'd be interested to see how that plays out. Oh, man, there's so much going on right now. It's just like we could do this for hours, but I do want to kind of wrap it up a little bit so we can let this fly out into the podverse, and then we can have a discussion all week about it. So Dan of the Match Poll, Dan, where were you at mentally going into this, knowing that you had this responsibility to the listeners?
It's all about making sure that we don't get negative with the Dan the Match Poll. Sometimes we won't run it after a result. This one didn't feel like not we should not run it. But look, Azpilicueta's in there, 4%. Zuma's in there, 11%. Rudiger's in there, 14%. No surprise, the overwhelming individual that won the match, or the day in the match poll, 71% supporters for watching, because that one was a grind. And everybody deserves a little pat on the back for making it through 90 minutes of that match.
I think so. I mean, I turned off my stream early. Is that the same, George?
No, you could just blame that on anything, to be honest. I just walked out because I thought, oh, I don't want to be in the queues of people to leave. I can't be bothered to talk to anyone, so I'm out.
I was so deflated at the last few minutes. Once, like, pretty much, I watched a little after the goal went in, and I was like, nothing's happening. I'm out. Like, no thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think after, to round up everything we've said, we just want to see something new. Mm-hmm. We just want to see some like... Even if it doesn't work, I've said this in the video that I'm releasing today. Like, if you shoot from 30 yards and it hits the roof of the stadium, like, that's cool with me. I'd rather see that than like trying to walk into four flipping defenders who are 6'5", and then next thing you know, like, there's a counter attack going on. I'd much rather see that. And Tottenham, I mean, if we win that game, I don't care about anything that's happened in the past 5 weeks. We could have lost them all 6-0. If we beat Spurs, they won today, didn't they? 2-1, yeah. Last minute. I don't think we will, but, you said Frank knows Jose. He knows what he's going to do. I'm excited now.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so the table as it stands, this is a live look. So Man City are up 2-0 against Arsenal at the time of recording, just to let you know how we are doing. So Liverpool at the top, 49 points, still quite ridiculous, undefeated. Leicester City in second, 39 points. City currently in third at 35 points. Chelsea fourth on 29 points. And this is where it starts to get a little bit hairy. So Tottenham in fifth on 26 points. And that's who we play. So talk about a huge match coming up.
It's a six-pointer, man. I mean, yeah. It honestly is. This is what I was saying earlier, though, right? Remember when we were comfortable in the top four or even third? You basically, by losing to three relegation-threatened teams over the last week and a half, have given up 9 points. Now, imagine where those 9 points would put us, 38 points, comfortably in there, and well ahead of Spurs, if, you know, kind of matching their recent uptick in form. So it is a big deal, George, that, you know, run of form is happening, or a bad run of form is happening at such a crucial moment, with the matches that are only going to keep coming thick and fast.
Yeah, but at the same time, it would be a very Chelsea thing to do, to just wipe all of this form book, rip it up, leave it in this decade, and go and beat Spurs in their new stadium just to remind them who the superior club in London is. It's like, you might have a nice fancy new stadium. You might have our old manager because he didn't fit in with us anymore. You've got our sloppy seconds now. Spurs, we're coming to your gaff and we're going to stick you to the sword. I think we're going to go there and play football next week, because at the moment I don't think we're playing like proper football. We've seen it this season away from home. Sometimes Chelsea look like one of the best teams in the league when we're playing away, and we look like relegation fodder when we're playing at home. And I think a lot of that might be down to just a fearless nature. And again, like, it's, you're in a hostile atmosphere. We will be next week. I think there's enough big name players, despite these youngsters, there's enough players in that team, the Jorginhos, the Kovacic's, the Kante's, all three of them have to play next week for me, all three of them. They can just grab this game and be like, listen, Mason, listen, Christian, like, this is the biggest game in our season. The fans are on our backs now. Everyone's on our backs. Literally, Tottenham are like piggybacking us and about to leapfrog us like a flipping, you know, pole vault over the top. Like, I think this team are going to turn up next week and get something, or at least put in a performance that we can all say, you know what? All right, cool. They had too much for us. Fair play, Spurs. Just fight.
Yeah, I agree with that, Dan. I think looking toward where we can hurt Spurs, I watched their performance today. Wolves pressed the absolute shit out of them and made them uncomfortable for 90 minutes and probably deserved to get a point out of the match. I think if we bring the right energy and the midfield plays well, you know, especially with Erickson not being in favor and knowing that he's hurt us a bunch in previous years. I think there is a real solid chance that we can have a solid performance if we bring the right energy.
Yeah, without question. I mean, we know, and I think George underlined this point perfectly, is that it is the Chelsea way to be in absolute and complete turmoil and to just absolutely be dropping these terrible results against teams that we should have beaten handedly, and then go out against a team that, you know, for all intents and purposes, probably has some better players, you know, in terms of a collective unit at the moment, and just go out and get the result. I mean, it would be the exact type of thing that we do. And let's hope that the Chelsea DNA in this moment is flowing strong and empowering our team, Brandon.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are trending down and they're trending up. But it is the perfect time to change the trajectory. And what a big one it would be. So... anyways, all of you, thank you for listening. George, thanks for hanging out, man. Yeah, it was buddy. Great.
Thank you for having me on. I always love coming on. We need to do it again.
We will. I'm sure we will. But listeners, again, let us know what you agreed with, disagreed with. Let's continue the conversation throughout the week. Discord is the best place to do that with us. Obviously, it's through our Patreon. Just let us know if you're interested in getting access. But all of you, thank you so much for hanging out with us another week, another pod. And until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.